from God knows where with an underage pilot to save his life, and he won't let us do it? We have an entire tissue locker full of healthy young hearts.
No transplant, says the man.
It's, against his religion, says the girl.
Tell you what, says the boy.
Why don't you do whatever they did before you had a tissue locker full of healthy young hearts?
The doctor sighs. At least she's still close enough to medical school to remember what that is.
It drastically lowers his chances of survival. You know that, don't you?
He knows. She gives the man a moment more to change his mind, then gives up. The orderlies and other staff rush the man back toward the ER, and the two kids follow. Once they're gone, she takes a moment to catch her breath. Someone grabs her arm, and she turns to see the young pilot, who had been silent through all of it. The look on his face is pleading, yet determined. She thinks she knows what it's about. She glances at the helicopter, then at the kid.
Take it up with the FAA, she says. If he lives, I'm sure you'll be off the hook. They might even call you a hero.
I need you to call the juvie cops, he says, his grip getting a little stronger.
Excuse me?
Those two are runaway unwinds. As soon as the old man is admitted, they'll try to sneak away. Don't let them. Call the juvie cops now.
She pulls out of his grip. All right, fine, I'll see what I can do.
And when they come, he says, make sure they talk to me first.
She turns from him and heads back into the hospital, pulling out her cell phone on the way. If he wants the juvie cops, fine, he'll get them. The sooner they come, the sooner this whole thing can fall into the category of not my problem. 48. Risa. Juvie cops always look the same. They look tired, and they look angry. They look a lot like the unwinds they capture. The cop who now guards Risa and Connor is no exception. He sits blocking the door of the doctor's office they're being held in, with two more guards on the other side of the door just in case. He's content to stay silent, while another cop questions Roland in an adjacent room. Risa doesn't even want to guess at the topics of conversation in there.
The man we brought in, Risa says. How is he?
Don't know, says the cop. You know hospitals. They only tell those things to next of kin. And I guess that's not you.
Risa won't dignify that with a response. She hates this juvie cop instinctively, just because of who he is and what he represents.
Nice socks, Connor says. The cop does not glance down at his socks. No show of weakness here.
Nice ears, he says to Connor. Mind if I try them on sometime?
The way Risa sees it, there are two types of people who become juvie cops. Type 1, bullies who want to spend their lives reliving their glory days of high school bullying. Type 2, the former victims of type 1s, who see every unwind as the kid who tormented them all those years ago. Type 2s are endlessly shoveling vengeance into a pit that will never be full. Amazing that the bullies and victims can now work together to bring misery to others.
How does it feel to do what you do? She asks him, sending kids to a place that ends their lives.
Obviously, he's heard all this before.
How does it feel to live a life no one else feels is worth living?
It's a harsh blow designed to get her to shut up. It works. I feel her life is worth living, says Connor, and he takes her hand. Anyone feel that way about you? It gets to the man, although he tries not to show it.
You both had more than 15 years to prove yourselves, and you didn't. Don't blame the world for your own lousy choices.
Risa can sense Connor's rage, and she squeezes his hand until she hears him take a deep breath and release it, keeping his anger under control.
Doesn't it ever occur to you, unwinds, that you might be better off, happier even, in a divided state?
Is that how you rationalize it?
Says Risa. Making yourself believe we'll be happier?
Hey, if that's the case, says Connor, maybe everybody should get unwound.
Why don't you go first?
The cop glares at Connor, then takes a quick glance down at his socks. Connor snickers. Risa closes her eyes for a moment, trying to see some ray of light in this situation, but she can't. She had known getting caught was a possibility when they came here. She knew that being out in the world was a risk.
What surprised her was how quickly the juvie cops had descended on them. Even with their unorthodox entrance, they should have had enough time to slip away in the confusion. Whether the Admiral lives or dies, it won't change things for her or for Connor now. They are going to be unwound. All her hopes of a future have been torn away from her again, and having those hopes, even briefly, makes this far more painful than not having had them at all. 49. Roland. The juvie cop questioning Roland has eyes that don't exactly match and a sour smell, like his deodorant soap hadn't quite worked. Like his partner in the other room, the man is not easily impressed, and Roland, unlike Connor, doesn't have the wits to rattle him. That's all right, though, because rattling him is not what Roland has in mind. Roland's plan began to take shape shortly after Connor released him from the crate. He could have torn Connor limb from limb at the time, but Connor had three kids equal in size and strength to Roland to back him up. They were kids who should have been on Roland's side. Should have been. It was his first indication that everything had drastically changed. Connor told him about the riot and about Cleaver. He offered a lame apology for accusing him of killing the Goldens, an apology that Roland refused to accept. Had Roland been at the riot, it would have been organized and successful. If he had been there, it would have been a revolt, not a riot. By locking Roland away, Connor had robbed him of the chance to lead. When they had arrived back at the scene of the riot, all focus was on Connor. All questions were directed to him. He was telling everyone what to do, and they were all listening. Even Roland's closest friends cast their eyes down when they saw him. He instinctively knew that all his support was gone. His absence from the disaster had made him an outsider, and he would never regain what he had lost here, which meant it was time to devise a new plan of action. Roland agreed to fly the helicopter to save the Admiral's life, not because he had any desire to see the man live, but because taking that flight provided a new door of opportunity.
"I'm curious," says the sour-smelling cop. "Why would you turn in the other two kids when it means turning yourself in as well?"
"There's a reward of $500 for turning in a runaway unwind, right?"
He smirks.
"Well, that's $1,500, if you're including yourself."
Roland looks the juvie cop in the eye, no shame, no fear, and boldly presents his offer.
"What if I told you I know where there are more than 400 AWOL unwinds? What if I helped you to take down a whole smuggling operation? What would that be worth?"
The cop seems to freeze in place, and he regards Roland closely.
"All right," he says. "You have my attention."
50. Connor. He's lasted longer than anyone expected. This is the consolation Connor must hold on to as the cop and two armed guards escort him and Risa into the room where Roland is being interrogated. By the smug look on Roland's face, however, Connor suspects it wasn't so much as an interrogation as a negotiation.
"Please, sit down,"
says the cop sitting on the edge of a desk near Roland. Roland won't look at them. He won't even acknowledge their presence in the room. He just leans back in his chair. He'd fold his arms if the handcuffs allowed it. The cop wastes no time in getting right to business.
"Your friend here had quite a lot to say, and offered us a very interesting deal. His freedom in exchange for 400 unwinds. He's volunteered to tell us exactly where they are."
Connor knew Roland would give him and Risa up, but giving up all of them? That's a new low for Roland. He still won't look at them, but his smug expression seems to have grown a little harder.
400, huh?" says the second cop.
"He's lying," says Risa, her voice remarkably convincing. "He's trying to trick you. It's just the three of us."
"Actually," says the cop on the desk, "he's telling the truth. Although we're surprised the number's at 400, we thought there'd be at least 600 by now, but I guess they keep on turning 18.
Roland regards him, uncertain.
"What?"
"Sorry to tell you this, but we know all about the Admiral in the graveyard," the cop says. "We've known about it for more than a year.
The second cop chuckles, amused by the dumbfounded look on Roland's face.
But
why don't we round them up? Says the cop, anticipating Roland's question.
Look at it this way. The Admiral, he's like that neighborhood stray cat that nobody likes, but no one wants to get rid of because he takes care of the rats. See, runaway unwinds on the street, that's a problem for us. But the Admiral gets them off the street and keeps them in that little desert ghetto of his. He doesn't know it, but he's doing us a favor. No more rats.
Of course, says the second cop, if the old man dies, we may have to go in there and clean the place out after all.
No, says Risa. Someone else can take over.
The second cop shrugs as if it's nothing to him.
Better be a good mouser.
While Roland can only stare incredulously as his plan crumbles, Connor feels relief, and maybe even a bit of hope.
So then you'll let us go back?
The cop on the desk picks up a file.
I'm afraid I can't do that. It's one thing to look the other way, but quite another to release a criminal.
Then he begins to read.
Connor Lassiter, scheduled to be unwound the 21st of November, until you went AWOL. You caused an accident that killed a bus driver, left dozens of others injured, and shut down an interstate highway for hours. Then, on top of it, you took a hostage and shot a juvie cop with his own trank gun.
Roland looks at the cop in awe.
He's the Akron AWOL?
Connor glances at Risa, then back at the cop. Fine, I admit it, but she had nothing to do with it. Let her go. The cop shakes his head, scanning the file.
Witnesses say she was an accomplice. I'm afraid there's only one place she's going.
Same place as you, the nearest harvest camp.
But what about me? Asks Roland. I had nothing to do with any of that.
The cop closes the file.
Ever hear of guilt by association? He asks Roland. You should be more careful with the company you keep.
Then he signals for the guards to take all three of them away. Part 6. Unwound. For your ease and peace of mind, there are a variety of harvest camps to choose from. Each facility is privately owned, state-licensed, and federally funded by your tax dollars. Regardless of the site you choose, you can feel confident that your unwind will receive the finest possible care from our board-certified staff as they make their transition to a divided state. From The Parents' Unwinding Handbook. 51. Camp. On the existence of a soul, whether unwound or unborn, people are likely to debate for hours on end. But no one questions whether an unwinding facility has a soul. It does not. Perhaps that's why those who build these massive medical factories try so hard to make them kid-conscious and user-friendly in a number of ways. First of all, they are no longer called unwinding facilities, as they were when they were first conceived. They are now called harvest camps. Secondly, every single one of them is located in a spectacularly scenic location, perhaps to remind its guests of the big picture and the reassuring majesty of a larger plan. Third, the grounds are as well maintained as a resort, filled with bright pastel colors and as little red as possible, since red is psychologically associated with anger, aggression, and, not coincidentally, blood. Happy Jack Harvest Camp, in beautiful Happy Jack, Arizona, is the perfect model of what a harvest camp should be. Nestled on a pine-covered ridge in northern Arizona, the sedating forest views give way to the breathtaking red mountains of Sedona to the west. No doubt it was the view that made happy men of the 20th century lumberjacks who founded the town. Hence the name. The boys' dormitory is painted light blue, with green accents. The girls' is lavender with pink. The staff have uniforms that consist of comfortable shorts and Hawaiian shirts, except for the surgeons in the medical unit. Their scrubs are sunshine yellow. There's a barbed wire fence, but it's hidden behind a towering hibiscus hedge, And although the unwinds and residents see the crowded buses arriving at the front gate each day, they are spared the sight of departing trucks. Those leave the back way. The average stay for an unwind is 3 weeks, although it varies depending on blood type and supply and demand. Much like life in the outside world, no one knows when it's their time. Occasionally, in spite of the professional and positive attitude of the staff, outbursts do occur. This week's rebellion is in the form of graffiti on the side of the medical clinic that reads, "You're not fooling anyone." On the 4th of February, 3 kids arrive by police escort. 2 were brought unceremoniously into the welcome center, just like any other arriving unwinds. The 3rd is singled out to take the longer route that passes by the dormitories, the sports fields, and all the various places where unwinds are gathered. Hobbled by leg shackles, constricted by handcuffs, Connor's strides are short, his posture hunched. Armed juvie cops are on either side, in front of and behind him. All things at Happy Jack are serene and gracious, but this moment is the exception to the rule. Once in a while, a particularly troublesome unwind is singled out and publicly humbled for all to see before being set loose into the general population. Invariably, that unwind will try to rebel and, invariably, that unwind will be taken to the clinic and unwound within just a few days of his or her arrival. It stands as an unspoken warning to every unwind there. You will get with the program, or your stay here will be very, very short. The lesson is always learned. However, this time, what the Happy Jack staff doesn't know is that Connor Lassiter's reputation has preceded him. The staff's own announcement that they've taken down the Akron AWOL does not deflate the spirits of the unwinds there. Instead, it takes a boy who is only a rumor and turns him into a legend. 52. Risa. Before we begin our session, I feel it's important to remind you that although you've developed a friendship with the so-called Akron AWOL, it's in your best interest to disassociate yourself from him. The first thing they did was to separate the 3 of them. Divide and conquer, isn't that the term? Risa has no problem being separated from Roland, but seeing what they did to Connor makes her long to see him even more. Physically, he was not harmed in any way. It would not do to damage the merchandise. Psychologically, however, that's a different story. They paraded him through the grounds for nearly 20 minutes. Then they took off his shackles and just left him there by the flagpole. No trip to the welcome center. No orientation. Nothing. He was left to figure everything out for himself. Risa knew the point wasn't to challenge him, or even to punish him. It was to give him every opportunity to do the wrong thing. That way they could justify any punishment they gave. It had worried Risa, but only for a moment, because she knows Connor all too well. He will only do the wrong thing when it's the right thing to do.
It looks like you did very well on the aptitude test, Risa. Above average, actually. Good for you.
After being there for half a day, Risa is still shell-shocked by the general appearance of Happy Jack Harvest Camp. In her mind's eye, she always pictured harvest camps as human cattle stockades, dead-eyed crowds of malnourished kids in small gray cells, a nightmare of dehumanization. Yet somehow this picturesque nightmare is worse. Just as the airplane graveyard was heaven disguised as hell, Harvest Camp is hell masquerading as heaven.
You seem to be in good physical condition.
You've been getting a lot of exercise, yes? Running, perhaps? Exercise seems to be a principal component of the unwind's day. At first, she assumed the various activities were designed to keep the unwinds occupied until their number came up. Then, as she passed a basketball game on the way to the welcome center, she noticed a totem pole by the court. In the eyes of each of the 5 totems were cameras. 10 players, 10 cameras. It meant that someone, somewhere, was studying each of the unwinds in that game, taking notes on eye-hand coordination, gauging the strengths of various muscle groups. Risa had quickly realized that the basketball game wasn't to keep the unwinds entertained, but to help put a cash value on their parts.
Over the next few weeks, you'll be involved in a program of diverse activities. Risa, dear, are you listening? Is any of this going over your head? Oh, would you like me to slow down?
The harvest counselor who interviews her seems to assume that, in spite of aptitude scores, every unwind must be an imbecile. The woman wears a floral print blouse with lots of leaves and pink flowers.